It's Friday, the 18th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to Solomon Hill. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and an everyday listener. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast, just like an everyday listener, and that is an actual person's username there on iTunes, make sure you do leave that review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the show. So thank you to an everyday listener and everybody who has left a review for the show so far this season. It goes an extraordinarily long way to helping the show become a success, and everyone who has done that and shown your appreciation for the show by doing that, I show my appreciation back to you. Of course, Moneyball.com.au has been sponsoring this podcast all season, so make sure if you're in Australia or New Zealand, you're playing your DFS on Moneyball. And hey, Basketball Monster, if you haven't checked out Basketball Monster, make sure you're checking it out. DFS projections, season tools, heaps of awesome stuff over on Basketball Monster. So I do encourage you to check it out and check out the membership options that we do have there. Maybe it's a little bit late in the year for your seasonal stuff, but we're going to have playoff DFS going as well, and something to consider for next season as well. I think it's an invaluable tool to drafting your team, to managing your team throughout the season as well. All right, we had an unusually busy Thursday with some craziness going down, in particular in that Memphis game. We've got a busy Friday with another 8 games on, so
let's get to it.
All right, I will. On Thursday, Instagram, we'll start there. We're looking at Isaiah Cannon. How many combined points and steals would the Cannonball have? The total was 16, and we had Tate 9 get that one correct. So congratulations to Tate 9. On Facebook, it was all Gaz Harris. Looking at how many combined points, assists, and steals Gaza would have. The total was 18, and Dylan Mee, Kevin Zhang, and Drew Wei all got that one correct. On Friday, for the Friday's games, Victor Oladipo on Instagram, we're looking at combined points, rebounds, and assists. And on Facebook, we're going with Trev Ariza, combined points, rebounds, and steals. So make sure you're liking those posts on the various social media sites and commenting your answer and getting yourself a shout out on the show. Let's get straight into the monstrous line of the night, and it is a back-to-back monstrous line of the night for John Wall. He had back-to-back triple-doubles. He's a back-to-back monstrous line of the night, and the Wizards get back-to-back wins. It's a back-to-backs all round. Wall played 37 minutes against the Sixers. Wasn't as easy as they would have hoped against Philadelphia, but still, they got the victory, and that's all they need at the moment. 16 points, 13 rebounds, 14 assists, 2 steals. Hit all 8 of his free throws. 4 of 17 from the field. Not really great, but yeah, the other numbers are really impressive, and John Wall is not the guy who's going to be really boosting your field goal percentage. He's not going to be that guy. He's not necessarily a punt field goal percentage guy, although he's been relatively sort of in that zone this year. He's taking almost 18 shots a game, and he's only at 42% from the field, which is not a great number, but his value obviously comes from the other areas where he's 25 and 10 with 2 steals and 1.5 threes. They're awesome numbers. Talked about him a fair bit yesterday. Don't need to go too much more into Johnny Wall. I wouldn't have thought, but he's pretty good. He's pretty, pretty, pretty good. The waiver wire line of the night. It gives me great pleasure to announce this one. The Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Show's first ever NBA guest, Joe Ingles from the Utah Jazz, played 27 minutes. He is the waiver wire line of the night. He is owned in allegedly 0% of leagues. That feels low. 15-4-2 for Joe. 3 triples, 6 steals. He went 6 of 8 from the field. I'm going to have to get him back on the show now to personally present him the waiver wire line of the night for this game. That's a massive performance from Ingles. With Gordon Hayward out, he's played big minutes the last 2 games. He wasn't all that awesome in the first one, but pretty bloody awesome here when he's getting 6 steals. He's actually averaging 1.5 steals a game over the last 2 weeks in the last 8 games. He's been known as a guy who can hit threes and get assists. If you're in a deeper league, you should be adding him while Hayward remains out, because he's obviously going to start and he's going to play big minutes and he's going to have a role on this team. Yeah, 3 triples and 6 steals is awesome value. And you're not going to get 6 steals all that often, I wouldn't have thought. But he'll get you 1 or 2. He'll hit you 1 or 2 triples. He'll get you 3 or so assists. And that can be useful. And I touched on him yesterday a little bit in the DFS segment as a nice minimum salary punt option if Hayward remained out. came through pretty well, I would have thought. What do you do with Haywood if you're in a seasonal league? Do you drop him? It's very much an individual situation where you sit, how your team looks, how your matchup's looking this week as to whether you drop Haywood, but it might be in play. I would imagine that we see Haywood return. If I had to guess, I would say the start of next week. We might see him across the weekend. I think it's a little bit doubtful, though. At this point, we don't know. So that means you might get another game or two out of Ingles in those deeper sort of formats. So a massive game from Joey in this one. The young gun of the night, Nerlens Noel of the Philadelphia 76ers. It was a night for massive, massive amounts of steals, and Noel did that as well. 14 points and 16 rebounds is good in itself, but 2 assists and 7 steals on 7 of 11 shooting for Nerlens. Missed both his free throws, so that's obviously not great, but we are well aware of Nerlens' struggles from the free throw line. He is an animal with steals, and before the season, I thought he could be a player who goes 2 steals, 2 blocks. He's not quite there. He's at 1.8 steals and 1.5 blocks. But over the last 2 months, he's averaging 2 steals a game. That's awesome. He's at 2.1 steals in the last month. The blocks have dropped off. They've dried up a little bit for him. Last season, he was more blocks than steals. This year, he's more steals than blocks. But the steals are always going to be a massive part of Nerlens' game. His field goal percentage has risen dramatically, a 7% rise in field goal percentage up to 53 now. Your nice rebounding numbers. The scoring's jumped up with that increased efficiency as well. And he has been a fantastic player after a really sluggish start when some people panicked and dropped him. And that's obviously wasn't the right move. And he clearly has to be owned, and there's absolutely no doubt about that. Interesting to see what the Sixers do in that front court. Melange of young guns. Nerlens Noel is pretty irreplaceable to me with his defensive ability. There aren't many guys with the sort of defensive skills that he has, and his offensive game is improving. It will take time, but I don't think it's a complete lost cause or anything like that. I think he does have an ability to put up some defensive stats. The dud of the night, we're going to back to Joe Ingles' team, the Utah Jazz, and his teammate, his wing compatriot, Rod Hood, one of my boys. 30 minutes for Rod. He had 8 points, 3 rebounds, and a steal. 4 of 13 shooting. Missed his only free throw. Definitely not the best night for Rod. He had a great opportunity against Phoenix. It's a huge opportunity when you're playing the Suns and you're a wing player. Not a good night from Rod, but he has been playing fairly well. Even with this stinker, in his last week, he's averaging 15.5 points, 2 threes, 1.3 steals on 48 and 82 as his percentages, including this dud. So there's still some pretty nice numbers coming out of Rod, and good to see that he is owned in over 70% of leagues. That makes sense. That's exactly where he needs to be. He's a top 100 player on the season, and he will be better and better and better, I'm pretty sure. I've got a lot of confidence in Rod. Let's look at the perfect lineup for Thursday's games. Johnny Wall at 47.6, and he was paired in the backcourt with Tone Parker, who went for 45.2. Very much an out-of-the-blue situation. I don't think we could have predicted that Tony Parker would have gone for as bigger numbers as he did, considering how much he'd been struggling recently. Shooting guard CJ McCollum, 40.4. He'd also been struggling, but he's always an opportunity to go big like this. The other one, Tim Hardaway, that was a great option if you knew that Kent Bazemore was out, which we didn't when we recorded the show yesterday. But with Bazemore out, Hardaway got the start, and he took full advantage of it. 37.4 at a low salary is awesome. The small forwards, Bojan Bogdanović, kept it going, 38.1. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, I said maybe it's a time to fade him when he was priced at over 10,000. He didn't get the 50 points, but he was still one of the better players on the board, 43.7 for Giannis. Power forwards, Nerlens Noel, 48.2, and Thad Young at 42.3. Really helps when you play the Bulls, obviously. And at center, Bismack Biyombo went for 50. He had just a ridiculous game with Jonas Valanciunas sitting out, and Biyombo dropped 50 DFS points. The total of that lineup would have given you 392.9 points, which would have won every single tournament you were in. Obviously, it's a tough line to put together, though, given some of those guys there, like Hardaway, like Parker, Bogdanović, Antetokounmpo, Noel, Young, Biyombo, Wall. You could make cases for all those guys. Parker and Hardaway, even Hardaway, but Parker's probably the one that was a bit of a spin out to get him in there, considering what he has done for majority of this season. All right, that's the start of the show done. Let's have a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we will get into the games from Thursday. All right, guys, we're back. Let's look at these games now that did occur on Thursday, and I hope you guys interesting to know how many of you guys watched the NBA, how many of you guys watched March Madness. And if you did watch March Madness and you've got a team, a rooting interest there, hopefully your team made it through. I have zero idea about college basketball teams and brackets and any of that sort of stuff. I really start looking into the college stuff after the first couple of rounds of the NBA playoffs are done, when DFS season is over, and then I start digesting all the college stuff and reading and watching as much as I can when I start preparing for the NBA draft. I've done a lot of reading on it so far, but in terms of watching games, I've done barely anything. And by barely anything, I mean I've watched about 5 games this year, just doing a lot of reading and a lot of listening, and then we'll catch up on stuff later on. The first game, the Toronto Raptors and the Indiana Pacers. Kyle Lowry played 43 minutes. He went 28-8 with 4 triples, 4 assists, and 3 steals. There was a chance that Lowry could have rested this game. It is the first of a back-to-back. Maybe he rests tomorrow's game. We'll wait and see, but it's a big game from him. DeMar DeRozan was back after his rest. He went 28-5-3 with a block, so nice numbers from him there as well. But the big story is Bismack Biyombo, who played 42 minutes. It was an overtime game. 16 points, career high, 25 rebounds, 2 blocks. He went 5 of 6 from the field. He went 6 of 11 from the free throw line. So this is what we need to take away from this. 16 points is his career high. He's not a scorer. He is a bad free throw shooter. He's going to hurt you there. But he is a massive rebounder. He's a great shot blocker. And these are the takeaways that you have to take away from Bismack Biyombo. Now, when Jonas Valanciunas comes back, which could be very well could be the next game, Biyombo goes back to 22 or so minutes. Even if Valanciunas is out, the likelihood of Biyombo playing 42 minutes again is very, very unlikely. In the other games where he started when Valanciunas has been out, he'd struggle to get to 30. He'd be 25, 27, that sort of thing. 42 is a massive aberration, and he'd started off the game on fire, so it made sense to sort of keep him in there and let him keep playing. But there's a lot to this game that you have to look at and go, is Bismack Biyombo a must-add? Look, no, he isn't. But short-term, if you can absorb a free throw hit and you're looking for rebounds and blocks, if Valanciunas is out, there's a lot of, you know, conditions there, then yes, absolutely. But you have to meet all those conditions. Is Valanciunas going to miss? Are you prepared that Biyombo is not going to do this again because he's not going to play 42 minutes again? Are you prepared to have your free throws dealt a pretty big dent? These are all things that you need to take into consideration with him. Terrence Ross had 8 points. He had a Richie Beno, a double triple one, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He went 2 of 8 from the field. Nice peripheral numbers from Ross, but he's just not trustworthy enough. And not much else. I did love the fact that Normie Powell continued starting. He played 20 minutes. He went 6-5, but he didn't get a big run there, with Corey Joseph getting 30 minutes and Terrence Ross 21 off the bench. But Powell limited James Johnson to a DNP CD. So that's good news for anyone who's a fan of Norman Powell, much like I am. Jason Thompson got 11 minutes, going 4-2 with Valanciunas sitting out this game. With the Pacers, George Hill broke out of a pretty significant slump, 18 points with 3 threes, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block. I need to correct myself there, because that's something that I hate, and it's a trap that people fall into. Obviously, I just fell into it then, of people saying that he broke out of his slump, or they've turned their form around, or they're back into form based on one game. You can be in a slump that's 10 games long. One good game doesn't break you out of it, and it's maybe it's not as much of a phenomenon over in the States, but the Australian media does it with sport all the time, and it pisses me off to no end. A team will lose 5 games in a row. They'll come out and win the next game by whatever it is, 5 points or 10 points, no matter what sport it is. I'm talking mainly Australian football here. They'll come out and they'll say, the Bulldogs have turned their form around. Now they're in good form heading into next week. Good form is not one game. And that's, I just did it right there. So George Hill is not in good form. He didn't break out of his slump. He didn't turn around his form. He had one good game. Let's see a couple of others before we can classify him as having turned it around. Sorry for self-chastising there. Jordy Hill got the start with Jan Mahinmi out of this one with back issues, which is never good for a big man. We've seen plenty of back issues. John Henson and Derek Favors coming to mind, of day-to-day back issues costing the player a month. Mahinmi, at this point in the season, I've been championing him as a guy to own, but if he's going to miss time with a back injury, you can get rid of him and you can get someone else into your team. Jordy Hill, 11-6 with 3 blocks in 37 minutes. Jordy Hill doesn't have to be that guy that you add, but he should be under consideration. Miles Turner, only 18 minutes. Now, foul trouble limited him significantly. He had 5 fouls in that time. 9 points and 10 rebounds, and he is someone who could also be on the chopping block. His production and his minutes have just not been there the last couple of weeks. CJ Miles had 13 points, 3 threes and 2 blocks. That's harkening back to him at the start of the season. I'm not buying into that. Monte Ellis, in 43 minutes, only scored 8 points, but had 7 rebounds, 7 assists and 4 steals. So getting it done in other areas, while Paul George was brutal with the shooting. 7 of 24, 18, 9 and 4, 2 steals, a block and a 3. So good numbers otherwise. Solomon Hill played 33 minutes, 12, 7 and 2 with a 3 and a steal. Probably one of his best games in the last, or in his career, to be honest. Do you do anything with him? I wouldn't have thought so. I think we'll leave him for a deep... He was barely playing at the start of the season. He'd have plenty of games in a row where he wouldn't get on the court. He's got himself more of a role now, but it's not going to be a fantasy-relevant role. Interestingly, Joe Young played 5 minutes. Ty Lawson, who was available, did not get on the court at all. So Lawson behind Joe Young, behind Rod Stuckey for that backup guard role. I don't think that will remain the case, but he's not going to be any fantasy relevancy outside of 18-team leagues, it feels like. He played 5 minutes in his first game and a DNP CD in his second game for the Pacers. So the fall of Ty Lawson is a massive issue this season, a massive story. The next game, the Washington Wizards and the Philadelphia 76ers, Otto Porter back again in some pretty nice numbers, 12-5-1 with 2 threes and 3 steals, really kicking it up a notch here. Brad Beal was out of this one again. He is just having a stinking run. That pelvis is bothering him again, and Al Anderson out with his ankle problem. Marcin Gortat, after that back kerfuffle yesterday, played 34 minutes. That's more like it, Randy Whitman. 16 and 13, no other stats, but that's pretty nice, and we just hope that back holds up. And Garrett Temple played 40 minutes and had 10 points. But he did have 2 triples, 4 assists, 1 steal and a block, starting in place of Brad Beal, but it doesn't overly excite me. Markieff Morris, ejected. Of course he was. 26 minutes for Marquee, 14, 3, and 2. So again, it's 2 games in a row where he's looking all right and then self-sabotage. It limits his playing time and limits his ability to actually blow up. This point of the year, I've been big on holding him, but you can't really do it at this point. That's not true. You might be able to, but by no means should you be, locking yourself in the room and going, I will not drop Marquee. If you need to move on, you need to get some games in, he's expendable. Marcus Thornton had 18 points in his 22 minutes, so he benefited from Anderson and Beal's absence. He had five rebounds with 2 triples as well, but he is strictly a very, very deep league guy, while Nene grabbed 11 rebounds and his role shrunk, obviously with Gortat back to full minutes. On the Sixers, Ish Smith, 20 points, 2 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals and 2 triples. 9 of 25 is not ideal, but back to putting up some pretty nice counting stats. And Isaiah Cannon, 34 minutes, he's playing the 2 a lot. He can be added in leagues. There's no doubt about that. Now, he didn't hit 4 triples, but he did go 15-4-4. He had a 3, he had a steal. He's going to hit you at least a 3 a game. He's going to score pretty decently. And when he adds in a couple of assists and steals, there's real value in Isaiah Cannon. So don't sleep on him. And he's only owned in 17% of leagues. He has use. Jeremy Grant returned from his concussion, 13-5. He had a steal, he had 3 blocks, he's going to annihilate percentages. He went 9-14 from the line and 2-6 from the field. So beware of both of those issues. While Hollis Thompson had 15-5 with 3 triples in 35 minutes. I would much rather add Cannon than Hollis Thompson, but Thompson does have your 14-team league value. Nick Stauskas, who looked good in the last game, was terrible. 13 minutes for Stauskas, 4-3. That's not ideal. And with Grant returning to the lineup, Carl Landry went back to the bench and played 11 minutes and went scoreless in that one. The Charlotte Hornets and the Miami Heat, a big win for the Hornets. The Hornets are absolutely flying at the moment. It's amazing to see the turnaround they've had. Kemba Walker, 21-7-7, 4 triples in 43 minutes. Nick Batum, 19-5-7 with 2 triples in 38 minutes. Marvin Williams, just getting it done again, 12-5-1, 2 steals and 4 threes. Just the threes that are coming out of Marvin Williams' ass at the moment are amazing. I can't believe the amount of threes that he's hitting, but he's taking them, he's hitting them at a ridiculous clip. It's beautiful to watch if you own him. Courtney Lee played 37 minutes. He had 13 points with 3 rebounds and 2 triples. Yeah, still a deep league guy. Cody Zeller hurt his knee. He's experiencing knee soreness, 14 minutes, 6 points and 3 rebounds. What that did is it opened up the door for big old Al Jefferson, who played 27 minutes and went 21-10 with a steal. Now, I have been vociferously arguing against Al Jefferson for standard leagues, but every time that I've said it, I have said the following caveat. Al Jefferson is not going to play ahead of Cody Zeller unless there is foul trouble or there is an injury. There's an injury. So Jefferson is going to play, and now Jefferson is worth looking at. Now, Zeller's injury doesn't appear too serious. It's not a thing that looks like it's going to keep him out multiple weeks or multiple games, but there's a chance he misses one. So Jefferson as a stream option the next time the Hornets play, it comes into play. He plays 27, 28 minutes. You can get a big game out of him. Now, 21 and 10 is probably ceiling for Jefferson at this point, but he's going to get more of an opportunity in 27 minutes than what he will in 21 minutes. So, yes, I've been anti-Al Jefferson. An injury happened, and it makes it look smart to have owned him. It hasn't been smart to have owned him, but it makes it look good now. And now you can go and grab him and see what happens. But this is the only opportunity for him to get it, to get minutes ahead of Zeller, because he's just not what they want to do. He doesn't provide the sort of play that they need, but that's still pretty good numbers. Jeremy Lin had 6 points in his 17 minutes and not much else to talk about on the Hornets. The Heat, Goran Dragic, 16, 7, and 8, a couple of steals, a nice solid line from him, and Luol Deng, 22, 9, and 3 with a steal, a block, and two triples. His resurgence has been remarkable. He was unownable to start the season. Chris Bosh went down, and he is now comfortably a top 100 player. Joe Johnson, 13, 3, and 4. He's obviously a must-own as well. And Hassan Whiteside, not the greatest night from Whiteside, but still 17 and 7, a steal and a block. It's pretty okay. Dwayne Wade, terrible shooting-wise, 3 of 13. 11, 3, and 3 with two blocks is okay, and it's not ideal. Justice Winslow had 31 minutes, so the minutes are nice. 3 points. Not ideal. 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. So getting it done in the other areas. And Joshy Richardson, 25 minutes for Rich, 18 and 4, 3 triples, 1 assist, 1 block. Continues to shoot threes at just a completely unsustainable rate, but he's doing it for weeks and weeks on end. He should be owned in pretty much all leagues. Now, he might not be because your team is probably super strong at this point of the season, but he is an ideal stream candidate. He is someone to own most definitely. If you own Harrison Barnes, I don't know why you still do if you listen to this show, but you are obviously dropping Harrison Barnes for Josh Richardson. You have to do it. He is in a pretty set role. His shooting is out of control. He contributes blocks, steals, threes. He can rebound. He scores. He has to be owned. Love Josh Richardson. Denver and Atlanta. Pretty comfortable win in the end for Atlanta. Ken Fareed. Now, yesterday I was going on about Fareed and Mike Malone. Malone saying he had no back injury. He was benched for poor defense. And if he's going to suck at defense, we're going to pull him out. I'm not going to leave him out there. I don't think he had a problem. The next day, next minute, Fareed's out with a back injury. So I don't know what it was, shenanigans from Malone. I don't know if he legit didn't know about it, but it was a really weird situation. With Fareed out, Darrell Arthur got the start, and he was terrible. 18 minutes for 6 points. I would have hoped and would have expected, or did expect more out of Arthur in that sort of spot, but it didn't work out for him. It allowed Yusuf Nurkic to play more, though. He played 26 minutes. He had 10, 7, and 2 with a steal and a block. He is still going to be a really good player, I think, but he's obviously been overtaken by Nikola Jokic. Now, Jokic was limited in this game for God knows what reason. 8, 5, and 2 for Jokic with a steal and a block. So still actually being really productive, but just not getting enough minutes. And Joffrey Lavernier gets the most minutes out of all the big men. 16 and 6 with a block on 6 of 8 shooting. He's the worst out of all the big men, but he has the best performance here. Do you do anything with it? You don't. DJ Augustine, though, should be added. 29 minutes for DJ, 17 points, 7 assists, 2 triples and a block, putting up numbers really consistently, while Emmanuel Mudiay, he struggled here in this one, only 3 of 11 shooting, 12 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal and a 3, so still racking up some counting stats, and was 1 turnover and 5 of 6 from the line, so some decent numbers there, but there's always going to be a percentage risk with him. Will Barton, the Devils line, 6, 6, and 6, 2 threes, and a steal. Not his best night, as per usual. And Gaz Harris, 15, 4, and 2, which we touched on a bit earlier. Jakar Sampson, the placeholder starter, 8 and 5 in his 13 minutes. And Axel Toupin went scoreless in his 16 minutes. And I just like to say Axel Toupin's name. The Hawks, Paulie Millsap, 16 and 11, 4 assists, 4 blocks, 2 triples. He's awesome. Al Horford, 11-3-3 with three blocks. He's also awesome. And Thabo Sefolosha stepped up in Bazemore's absence also. 14-3-2 with two triples and a steal. I talked about Sefolosha for a little bit yesterday and said that maybe you're crazy to add him in a 12 team or stream him in, but in this sort of situation, he's great value. Timmy Hardaway, 30 minutes. 21-7-4 with two triples and a steal. Do not get overly excited by Tim Hardaway. In the past, whenever he's gotten big minutes, all he literally does is score and hit threes. He doesn't do anything else. He's like Nick Young. So look at 7 rebounds and 4 assists and go, ooh, now maybe the Hawks might bring some assists out of him. Ball movement, rebounding, a different style of play. And he has looked a lot better the last couple of months. But Hardaway's not going to be a great all-round contributor. Kyle Korver, 11 points. He had 3 triples and 4 assists. Not a bad night from him. And Jeff Teague had 16 with 8 assists and 2 triples. And Dennis Schroeder went back to 11-3-3 in his 19 minutes off the bench. Not much else really happening on the bench. Chris Humphries chimed in 11 points in 17 minutes, so that's obviously relatively handy. The Memphis Grizzlies. Now I want to talk a little bit about this game and some of the things that happened in it. We saw John Henson we'll get into the stats in a sec. John Henson blocked Matt Barnes a shot at the end of the game, went up to him and started taunting him. Matt Barnes turned around, and if you haven't seen the video, you need to go and watch Matt Barnes' reaction as he turns around and looks at Henson, and it's just like, mate, do you know who I am? Like, are you seriously like getting in my face? And I can't think of a better way to describe it. It's just like, is this guy serious? Get out of my face, you dick. Henson gets ejected. Barnes is pretty calm, to be honest. He's very calm. He's walking around the court. He's talking to the ref. He's not gesticulating. He's not yelling. He's not screaming. He's just chatting with the refs. Contrary to popular belief, he does not get ejected. So Matt Barnes did not get ejected in this game. He subbed out and then he left the court. He also, as you may have seen with sensationalist headlines, he did not chase John Henson down the locker room tunnel. I first saw the headlines and I went, oh shit, Henson's been ejected and Barnes has just sprinted after him like he's literally chasing him. A meter behind him, trying to catch him down the tunnel. I went, this is not good. He's done. He's suspended. This is the end of Matt Barnes' season. It's not like that at all. Henson goes down the tunnel. About a minute, 2 minutes later, Barnes goes down the tunnel. He did not chase after John Henson. He went down the same tunnel, but you know why? Their locker rooms are down the same tunnel. Now, it is odd for a player to check out of the game and go to the locker room. I understand that. Also reports that he left the court and went into the Bucks locker room. He didn't. You can clearly see on the video that he goes to a separate room. John Henson takes the first left turn. Matt Barnes runs straight past that door. He goes straight past it and goes down to his locker room. The Bucks commentators were horrible. They were sensationalizing everything. We've got to get the police down there. We need security. He needs to go through Milwaukee's finest to get to John Henson. He didn't go anywhere near him. Look, stuff might have happened afterwards, and there's also reports coming out that both men needed to be escorted by security guards out of the game. From what I understand, and what I've heard as well from multiple people, and the report that came from is a guy that has had some issues in Milwaukee with untruthful reporting, I'll leave it at that. What I understand is the security just walked both guys out. They didn't go escorting them out of here. Guys, get out of here. You know, grabbing them by the ear and pulling them out. It's more like Matt Barnes was walking with security next to him in case the Milwaukee crowd turns on him. That's the impression I got from it. Barnes has a shit reputation. I understand he does some bad things. He does some dumb things. But I think that a lot of what was said about what he did is incorrect. He didn't chase after him down the tunnel. He didn't get ejected. He didn't go to the Bucks locker room straight after the game. He might have gone in there later, but I've heard from plenty of people that he didn't go in there at all. It was an odd move to run off the court. But can you get fined for odd moves? Tony Snell should get fined every time he tries to dribble, if that's the case. He might get suspended, but he did not chase John Henson down the tunnel. He did not get into a scuffle on the court, which is another thing I saw written. He did not get into a scuffle on the court with John Henson. I imagine that. This is what I read. Matt Barnes chases John Henson down the tunnel after on-court scuffle. And I went, oh shit, they were wrestling on the court. Henson got ejected and Barnes chased him out of the arena. And it's not what happened at all. Watch the video. More stuff might come out about this, but I'd say that the chances of Matt Barnes getting suspended for this are much, much lower than what you might originally have thought. Now, I've probably talked 5 minutes on the Matt Barnes situation here, but I think it needs clarity because, again, I'm very big on bursting narratives. You hear me talk contract year and what's the other one I talk about all the time? I can't remember. I've lost myself in Matt Barnes mania. Yeah, people say things as a narrative and it's not always right. And this one, a lot of what was being reported was incorrect. So just check out things for yourself. I encourage you to go and check out this video and tell me I'm wrong, because maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I misread it. But he didn't do a lot of the things that was said that he was done. Anyway, he started off ridiculously hot, Matt Barnes. He had 18 points in the first quarter. I mean, here we go. Matt Barnes is going to break Kobe's record. He's going to drop 100 on the Bucks. He ended up with 20. 2 points in the other quarter. Still a really good game though. 27-3. 3 triples, a steal, and a block. You have to own Matt Barnes in pretty much all leagues. Tone Allen played 34 minutes. He went 13-4-2 and had 2 steals. He has value in certain builds. And Lance Stephenson got the start. He started over Briante Weber. Stephenson went 19-7-6 with a steal. This is the move that makes the most sense, and it has made the most sense for quite a while. Stephenson obviously is a must-own. Jermichael Green, 11-6 with a steal and a block. Still has value as long as Zebo is out. And Ryan Hollins had 6-10 in his 25 minutes. The bench consisted of Briante Weber, who played 15 minutes. He went 2-4-2. Ray McCallum played 15 minutes. He went 4-1. Xavier Munford played 11 minutes. He went 2-1 with 2 steals. So that trio of crap guards that they signed, Munford, Weber, and McCallum, they're not going to have a massive impact as long as Stephenson is playing, it appears like. The Stephenson-Allen-Barnes 1-2-3 combo is the best 1-2-3 combo this team has got at the moment. So that is the way that they are going to run it. And you, McCallum, Weber, Munford, deep leagues. Jarrell Martin, who'd been playing pretty well up until this game, 5-3 in 18 minutes. And they were still without Vince Carter, PJ Hairston, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, and Brandon Wright. The Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he did not get a triple-double. He played less than 30 minutes, but he went 15-6-11 and had a steal and 3 blocks. So still big numbers from Giannis. Greggy Monroe, 14-10. Chris Middleton, not a great night. Only 30 minutes for him, 10 points. But 2 steals, 2 threes, and a block is still productive. And Jabari Parker was terrible, 7-3 with a block. Now, in this game, the starters, most of them struggled. The bench guys got some extra run. We saw Damian Inglis play 22 minutes, and he was a guy I was really high on at around his draft time. He has had a lot of foot issues, and he struggled to get going, and he's looked really bad and slow at times. But this is his best game, 10-5-2 and had 3 blocks. Miles Plumlee played 21 minutes and went 9-7 with 3 blocks, and John Henson had 4 blocks in his 14 minutes. Henson is always a great stream option for blocks. Plumlee's an okay stream option for blocks, but that's about all they have at the moment. Jared Bayless played 25 minutes. He had 10 points. I think his 12-team value, it looked like it could be there, but with Giannis handling the ball a lot more, it's not. And Tyler Ennis played 23. He went 13-5-3, and he is a real sneaky deep league guy because he's going to play 20 minutes, it looks like, on most nights. Rashad Vaughn played 21 minutes here and he had 5 points. He just consistently gets minutes. He's done nothing with them, but he has. It's good as a rookie for him to see him getting that sort of role. The Nets and the Bulls. Thad Young feasted on the Bulls' porous front court. 16-14 with 2 steals and 2 blocks for Thad. I was big on Brook Lopez. I thought Brook Lopez is in a great spot here. Didn't eventuate at all. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Just a real stinker from Brook and can't explain it. Bojan Bogdanović played 29 minutes. He had 26 points. He had 2 triples, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. It's 2 big games in a row from Bojan. He's had 70 points in his last 2 games. He's got value to own, definitely. These numbers, you know, 5 assists, the hot shooting, it's not going to continue. It might continue for a game or two, but it's not long-term viable. But we're talking playoffs now. I wish I had the playoffs drop. We're talking playoffs, so if it lasts 3 more games, maybe that's enough. A definite add to me. Don Sloan, 30 minutes, 13 points, 3 assists and 2 steals, and that limited Shane Larkin to 18. The point guard unpredictability continues with this team. Sergei Karasev had a massive role with Wayne Ellington out. Now, they didn't go with Markel Brown, obviously. Karasev played 32 minutes and went 11-5-5. he's a guy to watch. He's really, really an interesting guy to watch here. He's not an ad yet. He's a 18-team league guy at the moment, but that is a massive performance. And some of the Nets guys that I follow on Twitter have some pretty nice things to say about his playmaking ability. So he's someone to watch here down the stretch. Sean Kilpatrick had 12 points in 21 minutes. He is signing a long-term deal with the Nets, so that's great news for Kilpatrick. Some great quotes from him about how he's been living out of a suitcase. He doesn't know where his home's going to be. So good for him to getting a longer-term position and a long-term contract with the Nets. So congratulations to Sean. Markel Brown, 2 points in his 16 minutes. His value has dropped significantly. The Bulls, that Bulls medical staff. Taj Gibson, why is he playing? Another hamstring injury and he plays the next day. Now, he played 27 minutes. Maybe it's fine. I'm not in the locker room with them, but they've had that many stuff-ups this season that you have to query everything they do. Now, Gibson played 27 minutes, went 12-6 with 2 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks, so really productive. Everything coming out of Chicago yesterday was that, now Gibson's not going to play, we'll see how it goes, but he played, and it's very bizarre to me. Jim Butler, 22-3-7 in his 32 minutes. He is sort of easing himself back into things. Nick Mirotic, only the 20 minutes with Gibson playing, 9-3 with 2 blocks. And Bob Portis played 28 and went 12-14 on some inefficient shooting, 6-16, but added a block. I don't think that Portis is a great 12-team league guy. He's a 14-team leaguer with Pau Gasol out. Now, it wasn't Taj Gibson that hurt his hamstring in this one, but it was Etuan Moore, who lasted just 2 minutes. And that meant that Justin Holiday got 16 minutes, but it mainly meant that Dougie McDermott played a huge role yet again. 25-3 with 5 triples and an assist. Now, he is red hot. He is scoring at a ridiculous rate. But once the shots don't go in, he offers you nothing. You can add him. He's a great points ad. He's a great threes ad. He's a great free throw ad. And he's looking a lot more comfortable. And he's really talented offensively. But his overall fantasy game is limited by the fact that he does nothing in other areas. Now, players have maintained significant roles by being a guy like that. And before that season, that was sort of DeMar DeRozan's thing. Although he did average about 4 assists a game. And McDermott's getting nowhere near that. Do you go and add Doug? Sure. The Bulls have got a massive week next week. They've got 5 games. So McDermott is a great points ad. He's a nice threes ad. But the numbers that he's putting up are not going to continue. He's not going to shoot this hot. Cristiano Felizio played 21 minutes and had 6-10 with a steal and 2 blocks. A big night from him, but we can leave him to the 30-team leagues. Mike Dunleavy, 20 minutes, 3-4. He's still battling that illness, while Derrick Rose had 12-3-5 in his 29 minutes. The Bulls were up pretty big in this one, so guys like Rose and Butler didn't have to play the full array of minutes. The next game, the Portland Trailblazers and the San Antonio Spurs. CJ McCollum had 26-7. He had 4 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. A welcome bounce back for him because he has been a little bit down with his form lately. And Dame Lillard went 23-3-6 in 40 minutes and hit 3 triples. So not a blow-up game, but not a bad game. With Myers Leonard out with that separated shoulder, and they're saying that he's ruled out for the next 3 games on the road trip, that feels like an exceptionally short amount of time. He will be out weeks. I cannot see him being back in 3 games. Regardless, his fantasy value is pretty low. Mason Plumlee got some extra run, 28 minutes for Plumlee, 12-8-5 with 2 steals. If he's available in your league, I'm all for going and adding him. And El-Farouq Aminu looked okay, 8-6-4 with two threes and a block, but I don't think that he is a must-own guy. Noel Vonleh, the fact that he started this many games this year is bizarre. Has he had one good game? Has he had any good games? I don't think he's had a single good game. He continues to just start and play 11 minutes. It just is very weird that he... It's weird. Okay, starting doesn't really matter, but... the opposition power forward gets the start of the game against Vonleh, and they can destroy him. He should not probably be in the rotation. He's not as good as Mo Harkless. He's not as good as Aminu. He's not as good as Leonard. He's not as good as Plumlee. He's not as good as Ed Davis. He probably shouldn't be in the rotation, yet he's starting and playing 11 to 15 minutes most nights. It's weird. Alan Crabb, 4 points in his 26 minutes. He obviously doesn't have much fantasy appeal. And Ed Davis grabbed 9 boards in 17 minutes. He's a good stream option across the weekend if you're looking for blocks and rebounds and a high field goal percentage. But beware the free throws with Ed Davis. The Spurs, Tony Parker, 18 points, but 16 assists and 2 steals. Don't count on that happening much. Probably his high watermark for the year. Kawhi, 24 points with 4 triples, 3 blocks, and insane efficiency, which we've come to expect, and 22-6 for LaMarcus. Timmy Duncan went 11-7 with two blocks. Danny Green had a Danny Green line. 7 points, but a three. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. And that is why he's been a fantasy darling over the last couple of seasons. Obviously not this year, but that's what he can do. Patty Mills had 17 points with 3 triples in 21 minutes, and the rest of the bench just doing their little bits and pieces, but they're more than your 16 to 18 team league players. The last game of the night was a smashing. The Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz. Brandon Knight, 33 minutes, 17 and 8 with 3 triples. We actually had John Lewis getting some action here. 18 minutes, 14 and 8 with 2 steals and a 3. Do I go and add him? Absolutely not. Devin Booker struggled, 3 of 14. 7-3-3 with 2 steals. In 32 minutes, he's going to be better than this. And Alex Len's shot was also terrible. He is really struggling with his shooting at the moment. It's a very odd phenomenon. 4 of 15 for Len. 10 and 12 with 2 assists is helpful, but that percentage is really hurting. Not much else to talk about with the Suns, honestly. Tyson Chandler had 4 points in his 23 minutes. And yeah, Alan Williams played 2 minutes. So there you go. The Jazz, Rudy Gobert. I looked for him to have a bit of a bounce back, and he sort of did. 9 points, 16 rebounds, and 3 blocks, so that's pretty good. Shelvin Mack, 15, 8, and 10 for Mack. Has to be owned. Has to be. And Derek Favors, 12 and 5 with 2 steals and a block, while Hal Neto chipped in with 13 points. Trey Lyles also looked really good. 17 and 2, but 3 triples, an assist, and 2 steals. He is going to be a fantasy force at some point in his career. It might be by his 6th season, but he is going to be able to put up numbers. He can do it all. He can hit threes, he can score, he can rebound, he can pass, he can dribble. He is a playmaking 4 who is a stretch 4 who can also rebound. He has got a stack of talent. Now, he's behind Gobert and Favors, but I wouldn't be adverse to seeing some Lyles-Favors combo. With Lyles at the 4 and Favors at the 5, I probably need to check up some stats and see how that lineup actually looks. But I would not be adverse to that sort of thing. And putting him as the first big off the bench, which they did in this one, or play him the most minutes, behind Favors and Gobert, and run him at the 4, and run Favors and Gobert through the 5, it's gonna be a real interesting look. He's a better player than Trevor Booker, and I think it's going to be he's going to be a real weapon for this team moving forward. All right, that is it for the review of Thursday's games. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to preview Friday's action. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now when you're someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street. And I wonder if we'll ever meet again. Without a second glance, you turned your back, my friend. This is the end, the end, the end. And I can't pretend I'm ready to be your friend. So don't go, don't you know my face? Friday, the same as Thursday, which is a very weird situation in the NBA, but let's get straight into it. The first game is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Orlando Magic. This is the first of a back-to-back for the Cavs, so there's a massive chance that people rest in this one. Ty Lue has come out and said that J.R. Smith is going to be among the players who gets rested. Kyrie Irving has also come out and said that he doesn't want to be rested, given he sat 24 games at the start of the season. And does it feel weird to you that Irving only missed 24 games at the start of the season? It feels like we're waiting forever for him to come back, but he missed just 24 games. That's not a... It's a lot, but it's not. If Alki missed 50 games, he clearly didn't. Anyway, there's a chance that we see no Irving here. There's a chance we see no Love. There's a chance we see no Smith. A couple of times ago when the Cavs played the Magic, they were about 50 points up and everyone got rested. So they're going to feel pretty comfortable about their ability to handle Orlando. So whenever you're making your decisions here, you got to be aware that guys could rest and that bumps up the value of the other guys. Kevin Love rests, Irving and LeBron get a bump, and Channing Frye gets a bump. You have to really look at it, and we'll update that stuff as close to immediately as we can on Basketball Monster. It's tough giving a sort of a judgment now. Kyrie at 7,400 is not a bad play, assuming everything plays out as it is at the moment. He dropped 41 in the last game. You're going to be pretty confident of getting around 35 for Kyrie here. And if he's got a matchup against CJ Watson and Brandon Jennings, I feel even more confident about it. Not much else from point guards here. You might throw, no, that's not true. 4,700 for Brandon Jennings is mildly appealing. He did have 30 in the last game, but he's 4,700. The salary's jumped a lot if Lord Alfred is out. It makes me be, okay, maybe a look at him, but probably not. Because you know, if he was at 3,900, then sure, absolutely. And that makes CJ Watson at 36 an interesting guy who actually outplayed Jennings in terms of minutes in the last game. Skiles' tomfoolery with the rotation is, it's a pain. We know that. And it means you can't use Jennings in cash. You can't use Watson in cash. You won't use Payton pretty much at all because you don't know which way it's going to go. And nobody has any common sense way of knowing how that is going to play out. At shooting guard, I do like J.R. Smith here at 4,500. He is more of a tournament option, and by more, I mean pretty much exclusively. He's been okay. He's got 22 average across his last three at 4,500, which is not bad. He's been all right, but I think he's got an opportunity for a big one here, and he had a pretty good one in the last game. He's a 30-35 point upside sort of player. Iman Shumpert, we had that one huge game, but he does pretty much nothing. And Victor Oladipo is now at 8,100. That makes it real tough to use him, especially in a matchup with the Cavs when he's going to have Iman Shumpert draped all over him. So at 8,100, that's a massive, massive salary rise from Vic, so I don't think we'll be using him. I like LeBron here, and it all depends on if he plays, obviously, but if Love's out, LeBron at 9,800, you're almost guaranteed 40-plus points, and you've got easy 50-point upside for LeBron. He's under 10,000. This is a great spot. Evan Fournier at 6,000, not a good opportunity when you're matching up against LeBron. At 6,000, it's also a little bit high, so I don't like him there. Hezonja at 36, he's a tournament play maybe, but probably not in this spot. Power forwards. Kevin Love was huge with LeBron out, 48.1. He's at 7,000. He's been okay. Like 32 average is okay, but it's not great. And there's a huge chance he sits this one as well. If he sits, Channing Frye at 3,800 is a great tournament play. The last time Love was out, Frye dropped 33 points on our heads. He probably doesn't do that again, but he should exceed 25 if he gets 25 minutes. I would think that with how hot his shooting's been, and if he plays that extra role, I think that he is definitely in play. Jason Smith's a tournament option for Orlando at 4,000 with Vucevic already ruled out. Ersan Ilyasova, we don't know if he's going to play. He's questionable. And Aaron Gordon at 6,100, there is no cash game play for him at all. Skiles killed us in the last game. He's killed us in a lot of these games with Gordon. Gordon's production is nowhere near where it needs to be for that salary. Even in a tournament, I'm a little bit hesitant with using him. And same with Tristan Thompson. He's at 4,500. I'm not all that keen on getting him out there. As I mentioned, Nick Vucevic is out already. Dwayne Dedman's been getting around 20 minutes a night, but he's doing nothing with him. And in a matchup against the Cavs, this is not a good spot for him. Tim Mozgov did not play at all in the last game, so probably don't want to go and use him. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Thunder, fresh off a smacking of Boston. They've smacked the Sixers a few times before. They're favored by 15, or not a few times, they've only played them once. The last time they played and they killed them. They're 15.5 points favorite. The total is 219.5 here. So the you got your Westbrooks, you got Kevin Durant, but do they play enough? And this is a problem, especially with the high-priced point guards. None of the high-priced point guards have got lock-in great value. And Westbrook's one of them here. He's at 10,600. He's averaging less than 50 across his last five. He has not been as good as what we'd seen earlier on. Plus, he gets an opportunity here where he might play under 30 minutes. He might not, but it's not a great spot to use him in cash at all. Isaiah Cannon at 3,900, I'm absolutely fine with using him. He's averaging 25 across his last three, which at 3,900 is brilliant value. He's scoring, he's getting opportunities. Love him at this price. Ish Smith at 6,500 just feels a little bit high, but against Ross Westbrook, Ish Smith, did he used to play for them? No, he didn't. No, my mistake. Anyway. 38 points in today's game for Ish. 6,500 just feels that marginally expensive, but against Westbrook and the Thunder, I don't hate using him. I think he does have a place here. Also, let's celebrate the fact once again that Campaign has been in the rotation the last two games and played 20 minutes in each of them. Let's hope that trend continues. Randy Foy's also played 28 minutes in the last two games, so that's a pain in the ass. He's at minimum salary. He has an opportunity, I think, here as a real deep tournament. Your 50th lineup, throw Randy Foy in and hope it pans out, because it could be a blowout. He might get more touches, and if his shot starts going down, he can put it up. And at 3,500, he is interesting. I'll leave it at that. Nick Stauskas let us down today. Dion Waiters, no. And Andre Robertson, he does nothing. Small forwards, Kev Durant, the same as Westbrook. You got to pay $10,400 for him. He's averaging 43 across his last five, 44 across his last three. But what if the minutes go down? What if he plays 29? There's a big risk involved. And you know, you spend $600 less and you can get LeBron. And I feel a little bit more confident in LeBron's ability to get 40 points at least as a floor. Probably for a tournament, I would rather Durant though. Hollis Thompson at $4,000. He's a tournament option. No one else. Power forwards. Nerlens. I like Nerlens here. 6,700. He dropped 48 today. He's averaging over 35 across the last five games. And at 6,700 with no Jahlil Okafor, he feels like a lock for 5X value. Serge Ibaka is at 5,300. Hasn't really even been providing that sort of value lately, but this is a great opportunity for him. I am for using Serge Ibaka in a tournament here. I think that he has 30 points in him pretty comfortably. Jeremy Grant at 5,100. He's got a big game in him somewhere, but he's not reliable enough for cash. Carl Landry's out of consideration now. Alton Brand and Nick Collison were never in consideration. The centers, Enes Kanter. This has got his name written all over it. He's at 5,300. He is averaging across his last five, 32. He's averaging 33 across his last three games. He is going to beat up on the Sixers' second unit. He is probably going to go for 20 and 10 in 20 minutes. That might be an exaggeration, but actually it probably isn't. He's not going to do shit defensively, but 20 and 10 in minimal minutes is going to be big. 5,300 for Kanter. I love him. Steve Adams at 4,300. Hasn't been getting the minutes and hasn't been getting massive production. It is a nice matchup for him, so he's not a complete write-off, but he's pretty close to that. Boston and Toronto. Speaking about the Cavs resting players, the Raptors are a massive chance to rest guys here, so we need to see. It is a back-to-back for them, so Lowry is the guy who we're really going to be focusing on to see whether he plays or not. If he doesn't, Corey Joseph is at 3,600, and he would definitely come into consideration, and DeLon Wright would as well, who has had a 27-point game. He is priced at 3,500. That 27-point game came in 31 minutes. He would definitely come into consideration. So you would look at him in a tournament, and Corey Joseph at 36, you would look at him in a... I'd look at Corey Joseph in a cash game as well. Isaiah Thomas at 7,900. It's a horrible matchup if Lowry plays. If Lowry is out, then I'm a little bit more excited about using Isaiah. Marcus Smart has been doing nothing lately. He's at 4,500. You'd have to think he gets another opportunity to start. And he has mild appeal, but I'm definitely not excited about it. Shooting guards, DeMar DeRozan, we're going to assume he plays after resting earlier in the week. He's at 8,400. The defense of Avery Bradley has not been as stellar as what it was earlier in the season. He's got a 47 average across his last three. DeMar, at 8,400, can he get to 40 points? I reckon 40 points is about right. Avery Bradley not getting anything done himself, and Terrence Ross is a bit of a risky play. Yeah, Normie Powell, great option if DeMar DeRozan is out. Small forwards, Evan Turner at 5,600 really let us down in the last one. 5,600 is a little bit high, but I think that's a nice matchup, and I think that he is worth looking at in a tournament, but not a cash. Jim Johnson, no. James Young, no. Cody Clark, no. What an eclectic group of small forwards this matchup has. Power forwards, Pat, 4,000. The salary has risen. The production has not really risen enough to justify me using that, but it is the Celtics front court, so there is something there for Patterson. Jared Sullinger at 6,400. With the return of Olynyk and the sudden fascination in using Amir Johnson, I'm not using him at 6,400. Amir Johnson, he's at 38, and he had 34 in the last game. That's great, and it is against his former team. Back in Toronto, I am a little bit interested in Amir Johnson here. He is a tournament power forward option to me. Luis Scola, Jonas Jerebko, Jordan Mickey, no thanks. Kelly Olynyk, I don't think he's going to be a guy when we look at the centers that we pay attention to. Bismack Biyombo at 4,200. If Valanciunas is out, this is a brilliant matchup for him. He had 50 today, as we talked about earlier. He's averaging 36 across his last three. You almost have to use him. if Valanciunas is out. Now, if Valanciunas plays, he is a sneaky guy to look at against a Boston team who is terrible with against big men. 5,700 only for Valanciunas. 30 points shouldn't be that difficult for him to achieve, but he's a lot more risky than using Biombo in his absence. Sacramento and Detroit, no spread. We've got the both point guards are listed as questionable in this game, so there's a few things to be checked out prior to tip. Reggie Jackson is dealing with a breathing issue. Don't really know what that means. He's having shortness of breath. They've got to find out what's going on there. He is questionable. Rajon Rondo with that toe is questionable. I say there's a massive chance that Rondo does not play in that one, and that means that you want Darren Collison. He is at 5,700. He's already averaging 30 points across his last five, and that's with Rondo playing in four of those games. He has got serious 40-point upside here, one of the better point guards on the board, I reckon. Especially if Rondo's out. He's solid if Rondo plays. He's awesome if Rondo doesn't. Now, Rondo at 8,100, I won't want to be using him. And Reg Jackson at 6,600, it's a great opportunity when you go up against the Kings. But if you're dealing with breathing problems and the ability to get air into your lungs, that's a concern. At 6,600, does he get to 30 points? Well, he really has struggled to get near that recently. It is a significant bump for him, so I don't mind considering him, but by no means is he a must-roster guy. If he is out, Steve Blake would definitely be a guy to look at. Hit 3,500. They've got no other point guards unless you count Spencer Dinwiddie, who's barely played at all recently. Blake is going to get 30-plus minutes, and he would come into consideration as minimum salary guy. Shooting guards. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been playing sensationally. 5,300. He's got an over 30-point average across his last three. Dropped 33 in the last game. If Reggie Jackson is out, he's going to have to take on more offensive responsibility because Steve Blake can't handle that. So Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's going to get more shots and more ability to drive. Maybe some more distribution numbers as well. I'd love him in that spot. The Kings were missing a lot of guards in the last game. So Seth Curry played 34 minutes and James Anderson played 34 minutes. If Ben McLemore's out already, but if Rondo and Ballinelli are out again, then Curry and James Anderson are going to approach 30 minutes. So you look at Curry at minimum salary at 3,500. He dropped 19 in the last game. He can be a 25-point guy. He's fine to use. Jim Anderson had 24 in the last game. He was red hot. I don't imagine that continues. I would prefer Curry over Anderson if it gets down to that situation. Small forwards, Rudy Gay definitely hasn't been appealing lately. He's at 6,400, struggling to get anything done. This is not a great matchup, so we'll leave him alone. On the flip side, Marcus Morris is in a good matchup. 5,200 for Morris, 25 points, almost feels like you can just lock that in and be pretty comfortable about that. So he's a fine cash game option. Stan Johnson, no. Omri Caspi is also questionable, dealing with an ankle issue. Not the best matchup for him. His production is not quite there, so I wouldn't be using him with a bum ankle. Power forwards. Willie Cauley-Stein is at 3,700. He's jerked around a lot. Our projections absolutely love him here. So what do you do? Can he get to 20 points? At 3,700, it's what he needs to do. Will he play enough minutes? It is a risk. It is... In a cash game, it's not a horrific risk at 3,700. I think that he's still in a pretty nice spot here. Toby Harris is at 6,000, a great matchup for him. 30 points, you should feel pretty confident about using Toby Harris. Anthony Tolliver, Quincy Acey, nope. There's a couple of players who are on NBA rosters this year who haven't played a game, and I want to see them play. One of them is Duye Dukan for the Kings. Another one is Josh Huestis for the Thunder, and there's one more guy. I completely lost his name. Who is on the roster but has not played a game. If you can think of a guy who's on an NBA roster and has been on the NBA roster for the whole season and has not played a game yet, please let me know who it is. I know Duye Dukan, I'm sure that's not how you pronounce his name, and Josh Huestis are those two guys, but there's one other guy. I know there's one other guy, and I can't think who it is. Let me know who it is. Tweet at me, redrock_bball. Andre Drummond at center, 7,900. This is a real opportunity for him to put up some big numbers. Boogie also at 11,100, but that's a lot to spend. I would rather take the 7,900 of Andre Drummond and get 40 points than try and get 60 or 55 from Cousins, who's feeling pretty much a lock for 50, but it's not. It's a lot to spend, put it that way. Portland and New Orleans. The Pelicans are favored by 1.5. The total is 217.5 points. We look at the point guards first, and some interesting things here. Tim Frazier is listed as the probable starter for the Pelicans. He has a revenge game situation against the Blazers. He put up 33 points in his first game on stats which are not sustainable, some of his shooting numbers. But as a minimum salary guy who could be a starter, who in your first game for the team played 27 minutes, you'd have to think that 30 minutes is what he's looking at. And even if you only get 27 points, that's plenty. He is a must-play play. A must-play play? Yeah, that makes sense. A must-play play if Norris Cole is out, which we are absolutely assuming at this point. Jrue Holiday's at 7,500. I talked about him yesterday. The fact that they are limiting his minutes again is a real concern. He is a stay away for me at this point. Dame Lillard at 8,900. He is only a tournament option. Now, the Pelicans at the start of the season were an absolute turnstile for backcourt players. That is not the case anymore. They're mid-pack in terms of ease. Lillard's numbers. His highest score in his last five is 65. His lowest score is 27. He's averaging just 33 across his last three. He is not a guy that I want to use in a cash game at 8,900 because I have zero trust that he gets 40 points, let alone 45. Tone Douglas, who'll likely be back to the bench at 4,700. He makes him a stay away. And Brian Roberts at 3,500. He's in a revenge game, but I don't think we'll see much out of him. Shooting guards. CJ McCollum at 6,400 had a big game today against the Spurs, but had been doing a whole lot of nothing prior to that. He's in an okay spot here, so I feel okay about using him. Alan Crabb, Gerald Henderson, no, thank you very much. Small forwards. Alfarouq Aminu at 4,000, just a consistent 22 points across his last three, been really sort of right there. It's not tournament worthy, it's just a solid cash game option, and he can be used. Mo Harkless, Alonzo G, Luke Babbitt, none of those guys have really any appeal. Although Babbitt had a couple of those big games, but they were very, very fluky. Power forwards, Tone Davis, 10,200, 50 points should be the aim for him, so definitely fine there. Ed Davis at 3,600, Pelicans power forwards, or going up against Pelicans power forwards has been a bit of a boon of recent times. Davis is very fluctuable, though he is a tournament-only guy. And Ryan Anderson's been in a pretty good streak here, 5,800, I think he's okay to go and use. He's a bit risky in a cash game, but I think he's sort of in a consistent role at the moment. At center, Omer Asik and Kendrick Perkins we're not using, but Mason Plumlee at 47 I reckon we have to consider. The Pelicans against centers is a great matchup. Without Myers Leonard, he's going to get some extra run and responsibility. He put up 30 today. He just needs to get to 25, and I reckon he's a massive chance of that, especially with his ball handling ability. Chris Kaman played 16 minutes and put up 21 points in today's game against the Spurs. At minimum salary, do you even take a risk on Chris Kaman? You probably don't. 21 points at 3,500 is valuable, and that's exactly what he did today. So don't... He's a 1% consider guy. Chris Kaman? Probably not, but maybe. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves at the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 8.5. The total is 223.5. Patrick Beverley is at 4,900. He has not been getting anywhere near that, and you're playing against Rick Rubio and the Timberwolves, so no thanks. On the flip side, Rick Rubio against Pat Bev, it's not a good matchup for him. He's at 7,000. Rubio will leave him alone in that one. And then Tyus Jones and Jason Terry. Tyus Jones looking really, really good at the moment at 3,600. Dropped 22 in the last game, but it doesn't mean he's a fantasy option. Shooting guards, Jim Harden, love him here, 10,300. He feels like he needs to get back to 50, and this is the right spot for him to do it. And Zach LaVine's at 5,800, and despite his big scoring recently, it doesn't translate into massive DFS points because he doesn't do enough in the other categories. Now, 33 points at 5,800 is still okay, which is what he did in the last game, but by no means is he a must roster player at that salary because he's sort of just going to give you 28 points, 30 points, which is, you know, 5x solid cash, but the tournament upside it's just not happening at the moment. Small forwards. Trev Ariza's at 6,000. It's too expensive. Corey Brewer is just too unpredictable. And Andy Wiggins is at 6,500. It's not a bad spot for Wiggins. The numbers have been down the last couple for him. Only 22 in his last game. But that was his worst performance out of his last five. Again, I'd much rather him at 6,000. He's an okay option here. And the Rockets bump is in play as well. So I don't hate him. Mike Beasley. He's at 4,100. He is averaging 25 points across his last three, 24 across his last five. He is fine to use. He is getting force-fed the ball. He's taking a stack of shots. He's got a significant role off the bench as a power forward when everyone else is struggling. He's okay. He's fine to use. KJ McDaniel, Shabazz Muhammad, and Tayshaun Prince, they're not worth us caring about. Gorgie Jeng is at 6,400. Reckon he's in a real nice spot here. He's putting up 39-point average across his last three. He's at 6,400. He's playing the Rockets. Lock him in a lot of different spots. Donatas Motiejunas, Clint Capela, Montrezl Harrell, Josh Smith, Terrence Jones, they're all stayaways, clear stayaways. At center, Dwight Howard is at 7,500. The salary's come down a bit. His production has dropped as well, but JB Bickerstaff was making a point of we need to get Dwight more involved on offense. Probably not a good spot going up against Karl Anthony Towns, but down at 7,500, Dwight is in play. Towns is at 8,600, so his salary has dropped as well. This is a great opportunity for him as well. I think that 40 points should be the bare minimum for Towns here, so he is a really good DFS option too. The Warriors and the Golden State, no, that's not right, the Golden State Warriors and the Dallas Mavericks. The Warriors are favored by 9 points. The total is 223. Steph is at 10,300. He is risky. He's very risky in cash because he could sit the whole last quarter and you might get 30 points out of him. And at 10,000, you're not happy with that. But if you're spending up big on a point guard, Steph is probably the guy that I would consider. He definitely has 50-point upside, and he can go bang. But the Mavericks have been restricting point guards to a degree, but I don't think Steph really falls into that category. I would use him, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with it in a cash game. JJ Barea put up a nice line in the last one, but I'm not using him. 5,400 for Darren Williams, who stunk in the last game out. Does he get to 27 points? Yeah, maybe. And Steph and the pace of the Warriors does allow opposition point guards to go okay. So I think Darren can be considered. Ray Felton is getting minutes, but the production's not enough. Shooting guards, Wes Matthews, just forget about it. Klay Thompson at 6,800 has not been living up to that sort of salary recently, so I need to see a little bit from him now. I do have the feeling this is a good game for Klay, so I would tournament him, and that's about it. Devin Harris, 3,500. Leandro Barbosa, Brandon Rush, and Ian Clark, all minimum salary, and neither of them are probably going to have much of a chance to return value. Harry Barnes, 4,100. No thanks. Chandler Parsons at 7,000. He's been pretty good. He's been pretty solid, definitely for standard leagues. The DFS number's not quite there, and this is not a good opportunity for him. Power forwards, Dirk, 7,400. I just really find it hard to spend that much on Dirk. I know he's been averaging 38 across his last five. I'd be sort of okay, but I'm not massively confident. David Lee at 4,800, that's a tournament only to me. I have zero confidence in him. And 8,300 for Draymond, only averaging 39 across his last five, which is not terrible, and a minimum of 36. So he's an okay cash option, but I reckon you can probably find a better guy. But the minimum, his highest is only 45, which is still pretty good, but I don't know how to really phrase it properly with Draymond at the moment. He's volatile, but he's still got a pretty high floor. I think he's usable. Maurice Spates has been on fire lately, but it's really hard to trust that happening. That's a tournament option only. Centers. Andrew Bogut at 4,900. Been putting up some pretty nice numbers, but he is not trustworthy. Zaza Pachulia, you can forget about. And Anderson Varejao. Oh, Varejao, that sounded terrible. Anderson Varejao, don't think we'll be using him for DFS. The last game is the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Lakers. There is no spread released for this one just yet. Byron Scott, again, with his idiocy. I won't hesitate to pull Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell if Lou and Marcello were playing better. You should hesitate. Stop trying to win games. Not only is he trying to win games to ruin the Lakers draft pick, but he's trying to ruin development as well. He's a top-class guy. Brandon Knight's at 6,500. I love him here at 6,500. This is a really good spot against the Lakers. It didn't succeed all that well against Utah, but that's the Jazz defense. A big difference between the Jazz and the Lakers. On the other side of things, D'Angelo Russell at 6,900. Really tough to use him. It's a great matchup, but it is tough given the Byron issues. Tournaments, I think he's a good guy to look at. Marcelo Huertas, if Kobe is out at 3,800, you're almost locked to get 20 points, so that's fine value in that sort of situation. Kobe is a game-time decision, 50-50, questionable call. We wouldn't be using him anyway. Jordy Clarkson at 5,800 has been getting nowhere near value, but I reckon this is a great spot for him to actually go off and put up some big numbers. So I do like using Jordy Clarkson here. Lou Williams at 5,000 is a tournament option to me. And Devin Booker at 6,600. He's not really approaching that number lately. 25 average across his last three, 31 across his last five. He's a tournament play, but he's not a cash game play. Small forwards. PJ Tucker. Do you believe in miracles? No. Chase Bottinger. No. Meta World Peace will probably start if Kobe's out. That doesn't mean we need to use him in DFS, though. Power forwards. Mirza Teletovic is a tournament play at this point, and that's it. Brandon Bass at 4,000. You're going to get 20 points from Brandon Bass. 22 points. And at 4,000, that's plenty of value. I think that he, and this is against the Suns, I think that he is a solid cash game play if you're looking for that cheap salary guy. Julius Randle's at 6,200. He's in a really good spot here. I'm not a massive Julius Randle fan, but he should get over 30 against the Suns. And Larry Nance is at 3,600. He dropped 24 on the last one. Byron Scott wants to play Larry Nance at the 3 alongside Julius Randle, which just doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense. But if it means extra minutes for Nance, I'm fine with it. He had 24 in the last game, which is great. This is a great opportunity for him as well against the Suns. So he is in play as a punt option. Alex Lenz at 7,100. It is way too expensive given his current form. Centers. Tyson Chandler, 4,700. Stinker today. Not really all that keen on using him. And Roy Hibbert, Robert Sacre, and Tariq Black. No good at all. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. Point guard, Timmy Frazier. 3,500, Brandon Knight, 65, and Steph Curry at 10,300, and I've said tournaments there because there is a risk of him sitting a fourth quarter. Shooting guards, J.R. Smith, 45, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 53, and Jim Harden, 10,300. Small forwards, Mick Beasley, 41, Marcus Morris, 52, and LeBron James, 98. Power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein, 37, Nerlens Noel, 67, and Tony Davis, 10,200. And the centers, Mason Plumlee, 47, Enes Kanter, 53, and Andre Drummond, 7,900. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Thank you for listening, and thank you for listening all throughout the season, and thank you for all the kind words of support you have sent me via Facebook, via tweets. Your ability to share the show helps the show a lot. Reviews, all that sort of stuff has been awesome, so thank you for everyone for doing that this year. Follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball and facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Follow Basketball Monster, which is at Bask Monster, for all up-to-date news, lineup changes. And if you want to see the impacts of these lineup changes and injuries on the projections, make sure you're a member at Basketball Monster, which is very, very easy to do, and really, it's not all that expensive. Of course, Hardwood Paroxysm, stacks of stuff going on, lots of NCAA tournament talk going on over at Hardwood as well, so make sure you're checking that out. Also, we are done. Thanks for sticking with us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.